Item 41, accept the Residential Demolition Ordinance Implementation Report from the Bureau of Development Services and Development Review Advisory Committee.
Commissioner Udaly.
This is my first item, and it was in the pipeline before I assumed my seat or took on the Bureau. I want to thank you for the assignment. The more I dig into the work of BDS, the more I see how vital it is to a lot of my personal areas of concern. So I am going to turn this over to, I believe, Nancy, to give the report.
Thank you.
Thank you for your hard work.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. It's nice to meet you. I'm Nancy Thorington with the Bureau of Development Services. I'm a Senior Code and Policy Analyst, and I drafted the ordinance with the help of the Development Review Advisory Committee, or DRAC, and this is Jeff Fish. I'll let you introduce yourself, Jeff.
Jeff Fish, Fish Construction. I chaired the demolition ordinance during the period of working with the public on that.
Thank you.
Okay, so I don't know how much the mayor and Commissioner Udaly know about the background of this, but basically what happened was we had a previous version of the ordinance that had notice provisions that were not working very well, and then there was an exception in there that was called like the one-for-one exception for the demolition ordinance that allowed somebody who came in for a demolition permit to avoid any notice or demolition delay if they came in simultaneously with a permit for a replacement structure. So that it caused problems on both sides. So there was a report that was done by the Historic Review, no, what are they called? The Historic Landmarks Commission, sorry. And so they asked that that those provisions be looked at. So the council gave us that direction, and we met for about a year and a half with the DRAC subcommittee, and then came to the council with an ordinance that changed those provisions. And as part of that ordinance, there was direction from the council to come back in 18 months and report on how it was going. And that's basically what this is. This is that implementation report. So we have this first slide here is just a general overview of what the provisions were. Basically, it did two things. It changed the residential demolition delay requirements, and then it added a new category of permit for major alterations and additions. Those are referred to in a lot of the materials as MRAAs. And the reason why we added this category was there was some concern with some of the demolitions being what they call, well, or work being done was essentially virtual demolitions where the only thing left was like one wall. And so there was no notice to the neighbors that something like that was happening. So we added that category. For the demolition delay requirements, we made some really big changes in the notification. So the previous notice only required one of those big, you know, notice of intent to demolish forms being posted on the property itself and then notice to the neighborhood organizations in that area. The notice changes provisions changed so that now all properties within 150 feet get mailed notice. And there's also mailed notice in addition to those recognized organizations, also to the Architectural Heritage Center and Restore Oregon. Thank you, Commissioner Fitz, for that addition. And then we also added door hangers to the surrounding properties no less than 5 days before the demolition, because one of the big concerns with the demolitions was the hazardous materials that could potentially get put off during a demolition. So now all residential structures in areas that are within the residential comp plan map designation as residences are subject to a 35-day delay. And then there's also a possibility for a 60-day extension if an appeal is filed. And I'll go through the appeal things in a minute. We also added a definition of demolition to the code. That seems really simple, but there was no definition anywhere. There wasn't, not in the state building codes, not in our codes, nowhere. So it made it a lot easier, so we were all talking about the same thing. And then this last piece, we added a certification regarding asbestos and lead-based paint. Now, that's not in the ordinance, but BDS added that. We met with the agencies, the state agencies that regulate those. BDS has absolutely no control over that. That's not part of what we do. We're not hazardous material experts, and it's not, we have no jurisdiction over it. But we met with DEQ and Oregon Health Authority, the Contractors Board, and other stakeholders to come up with this document that basically anybody who's doing a residential demolition or a major alteration has to sign this document that says, you know, I'm aware that there are regulations, they may apply, and I've complied with anything that does apply. It doesn't give any authority or right to sue or any of those kinds of things. What it does do is, if one of the regulatory agencies does want to, you know, start an action, they have some evidence that the person knew about the regulation. So that's its function. That's the best we could do, given the fact that we don't actually have any jurisdiction.
Can I ask you a follow-up question on that?
Absolutely.
And I'm delighted that you've added that, and I hope at some point council discusses of the broader question of whether those are disclosures that should be made at the time the house is sold as well. But my question to you is, while we can't mandate compliance with another set of regulations, is the statement that we're going to ask people to certify subject to some penalty if someone makes a false statement to us?
Not enforcement by us. It's only subject to enforcement by the agency that regulates it. And the way it works is...
I want to preserve your time here. Since this is a report and the commissioner in charge is not coming back with code for a few months, what I would just ask you to look at, mm-hmm. just consider, and maybe get the legal opinion. Again, since we're bootstrapping here and we're requiring that someone say that they're aware of an obligation and that they're going to comply with whatever their legal obligations are, I would love to know whether we have the right to hold them to some legal standard in terms of a false statement to a government, and whether that gives us a hook independent of actually enforcing the state or federal environmental regulation.
Okay. Let me just ask, in the 18 months since we put that rule in place, have we had any complaints from community members that there's been a problem even though the developer has signed the agreement?
We've had a couple of complaints, and still the issue is very frustrating for the community right now because we don't have the authority, but we're the ones that issue the demolition permit. So they look to us, but we can't do anything, other than provide the information and, you know, say here's who you can contact. But it is very frustrating. Just as a point of information, DEQ handles asbestos, but actually with demolitions, residential demolitions, there are no regulations for lead-based paint. It only applies to the renovations. It's crazy. The legislature is considering taking that up in this current legislative session. I've worked with Senator Dumbro and a few others. I know it's crazy. I hear the look on your face. It is. It's nuts. But there's nothing there. So we can't, no agency has the ability to enforce anything at the moment on a residential demolition.
Could somebody remind me, is that on our legislative
agenda? It isn't yet, but isn't it fortunate that we had to delay the adoption of that?
I have a feeling it's going to be added.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But with asbestos, with asbestos that has been, that does have, the state does have authority, do we know if any demolitions have had a complaint about the asbestos to the DEQ or the OHA?
Yes. I've heard complaints. Basically what happened, and this will be in one of the other slides, but I'll address it at this point. With the asbestos, in the, I think it was 2015 legislative cycle, they adopted SB 705, which now requires that anybody doing a residential demolition has to have an asbestos survey done. And that's currently, that's all that's required. We actually asked DEQ and the implementing regs to include a requirement that that report be produced to the local jurisdiction, and they didn't want to do that because they were concerned about some of the smaller jurisdictions. So hopefully, if the in the current legislative session they do introduce something, they are considering allowing local jurisdictions to adopt local regulations to require that. We're in kind of a touchy situation because we're one of the few agencies, BDS, that's actually regulated by another agency. So we're regulated by the Building Codes Division, and so we can't do certain things. That's why our hands are so tied on some of these
things.
Can I come
back to that point just for a sec?
Sure, absolutely.
This has been enormously eye-opening for me. Uh-huh. That's why, because we don't know what we don't know, and because we know that both DEQ and OHA are overwhelmed in terms of doing their oversight, that's why I'd like to see some consequence to a disclosure that we later find was not honored. So saying you know you have a legal obligation, saying you're going to follow it, then later skipping, let's say, an asbestos survey, or knowingly using one of these firms that's substandard or what have you, then gives us an independent hook because they've made a representation to us as local government. The other thing I just want to highlight from my colleagues, and I'm sure Commissioner Fritz will put the lead-based paint issue on our agenda for tomorrow, in all of the tests that have been done by the Multnomah County Health Officer at the request of some family that wanted their child tested for the potential for lead poisoning, in all of them, the investigations have gone back and found in the cases where the child had an elevated level that it was either some kind of fixture in the home, lead in a teapot, lead in something that the child was using, or lead paint, overwhelmingly lead paint. And in none of the instances where the investigations have been done has it traced back to lead in the water. So we know that lead paint is the principal source of lead risks in the home. We're going to have to update our laws in terms of regulating lead paint generally, particularly in homes in substandard buildings. But this is, again, a critical issue where I would be reluctant to defer just to the state, the other regulators, because they're swamped, and they don't have the capacity right now to enforce the law. I'd want to come up with something where there's a disclosure and some teeth if that disclosure proves to be misleading or false.
Yeah, thank you. And one of the, again, going back to the constraints that BDS has, we, our inspectors basically look at, the building, the structure as it's being built, not as it's being torn down. We don't have expertise in hazardous materials. Typically a jurisdiction that would regulate that would have, an air quality board, water quality board. Those would be the agencies that would look at these issues and, would have the staff and expertise to do that. And that's a key component that's missing if that's the, direction the council decides to go. Okay, so these are some of the points with the demolition delay, the extension that can go for 35 days, and then an extra 60-day extension with the submittal of an appeal. And that goes to the code hearings officer with an appeal fee or an appeal fee waiver. And they have to produce documentation showing that they're actively pursuing an alternative to demolition. The appeal process was one of the big additions to this ordinance because it allowed, now it allows anybody, not just, it used to just be the recognized organizations that could request an appeal. Now anyone can do it, and it goes to the code hearings officer, and there are some other additions to this. It also puts the burden on the appealing party because under the old ordinance, it was actually on the property owner to show that the appellant wasn't pursuing an alternative to demolition. And they have to show basically a plan that has, you know, here's our budget, here's what we're planning to do to try and purchase this to purchase this site or to otherwise save it, move it. They have to contact the property owner and show what significance it has to the neighborhood. These are the numbers. So from April 30th or 20th of 2015, which is when the ordinance took effect, until the end of October of 2016, there were 562 demolition permits that were subject to the ordinance and 65 that were not. The 65, most of those were, they were not within a residential comprehensive plan map area, or they were subject to the Title 33 120-day delay because they're historic. And these are the rough implementation costs of this. The staff, this only captures the permitting services tech time that's specifically dedicated to the demolition ordinance implementation. It doesn't capture, you know, like my time or you know, inspectors or plan reviewers' times on this. And so that's $194,000 for one FTE, and then it takes about 45 minutes per application for a Tech 2. And then the printing costs of about $15,000, and then the appeal fees. The way the appeal fees work is the code hearings office charges about $1,300 per appeal, and there can be a waiver if the appeal is filed by the recognized organization. So there were 12 appeals since the ordinance took effect, and of those, 10 took advantage of the fee waiver, and so the city pays that cost.
Under what circumstances would the city not waive the fee?
If the appeal is brought by an individual and not a recognized organization.
So effectively, is there any fee for a recognized organization, or effectively, is there none?
It has to be the recognized organization whose boundaries include the site. So if you're in one area, if you're a recognized organization in one area of the city, you can't file an appeal in another area.
Okay, so it's a geographical requirement.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. So this is kind of a snapshot of what worked. Now all of the demolitions are subject to the notice and delay except for nuisance properties or anything that's subject to the zoning code delay. And then we added the major alteration and addition provisions. The outreach, we did a lot of outreach. Myself and a couple of other staff members went to neighborhood association meetings. We held a lunch and learn. We did a lot of different things to get the information out to the community about the appeal process and you know, worked on, you know, getting forms and other outreach materials. The notice provisions have really proved to be very effective. We've, you know, neighbors now know, because what was happening was, you know, somebody would go off to work and then come home and the house next door was gone by the time they came home. They didn't have any time not only to kind of emotionally prepare for the fact that this house was going to be gone, but, you know, cover their car or, you know, make sure their windows were closed if it was a hot day. So that's really helped a lot in that regard. And then the appeal process itself has really, for the most part, worked very smoothly. I'll go into some of the things we do want to tweak. And then BDS staff created these implementation guides that were pretty effective in terms of kind of, you know, fleshing out the ordinance itself, because, you know, as an ordinance, we weren't trying to anticipate every possible scenario, and so these guides have really done that, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. We want to actually use those and as building blocks to creating some admin rules. So some of the things that didn't work in the appeal process, basically, whoever appeals, they're getting an extension of 60 days for a total of 95 days to try and save the structure. But there's no incentive. One of the biggest complaints, not only by the appellants but by the code hearing officer, was that they didn't have any incentive for the property owner to negotiate. And so we want to take a look at if there's some way to, you know, make that happen. There's a term in the ordinance. It calls for having a pro forma budget. We put that in there based on United Neighbors for Reform. They asked us to put that in there. But everybody, including the code hearings officer, is, what's a pro forma budget? So we'll probably recommend, you know, changing that just to a budget or, you know, something. And then who has the authority to negotiate any kind of purchase? That's been kind of difficult because sometimes you get these properties that are in escrow. And so technically it's owned by the current owner, but then you have the future owner who is actually the one doing the demolition. And so there's a little bit of confusion about, you know, how do you handle situations like that. So we want to take a look at that. One of the issues that the code hearings officer mentioned was he was struggling with how people demonstrate significance to the neighborhood. He applied that pretty loosely. I mean, you know, it's like my grandmother baked cookies there. You know, it was almost as broad as it could be. So he asked us to take a look and see if we could make those criteria a little easier for them to apply. But we'll talk to the DRAC subcommittee about that because, you know, we were trying to keep, you know, some of those balances happening.
How many appeals were there?
There were 12. And then one of the other really big difficult issues was when the plan to save the structure had to be consummated, because that's the word that's in the ordinance. It says it has to have, you know, be reasonably able to be consummated within the 95 days. So the question came about, does that mean that escrow has to close or that the house has to be moved or, you know, that the deal has to be complete or that escrow has to be opened or that an agreement signed? So we want to kind of look and see if we can find a good way to make that clear what that means so that everybody's a little can apply it better. One of the issues that came up was when you go to move a structure, it can't actually be done. The permits can't even be obtained in that 95-day period. So that was a problem.
So did any of the 12 result in potentially saving the house?
I think one did that we know of. I mean, part of the problem is, you know, once the appeal is done, we're out of it. So if they negotiated something, we wouldn't necessarily know that. But And then, you know, in some of the cases, they went in and they looked at it and they said, yeah, no, this really is, it's going to take too much to bring it up. So they just let it go. And then one of the other issues that the code hearings officer brought up is whether evidence could be submitted at the hearing because a full packet has to have, you know, the budget and the plan and all those things. But that has to be done within the first 35 days. And sometimes you don't have all the information. So they might want to supplement that with more information on how they're planning to, you know, raise the funds or something like that. So,
who is BDS working to resolve these issues?
Yes, yeah. So basically, this is a report. The demolition subcommittee will meet again after this. We wanted to get a little bit of feedback from you on a couple of issues so that we can then come back with actual code language proposals.
Great,
you.
Thank you. So you expect to come back to us with these issues resolved?
Exactly.
Or draft language?
Exactly.
Good,
yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then there were more. I'm sorry?
There's more, sorry.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
The second page.
Yeah, what didn't work, again, some of the equity issues, that those were always there, but it really highlighted the problem with equity in that basically of those 12, the ones that got saved or the ones that where the appeals were granted, they were all in wealthier neighborhoods where people could afford to buy the house outright. And the ones that were denied, except for one that was appealed late, were all in more modest neighborhoods where they couldn't come up with a plan, you know, with enough money. And then some of the issues with the scope of the demolition notice that we want to address, whether it needs to be expanded, and then this one here, the application of the ordinance to all residential structures. I'm going to go to the next slide. What happened was, as I was mentioning, BDS is subject to regulation by the Building Codes Division, and so we can't enact anything that's already in the building code, that's already covered by the building code. So for, you know, for years and years since this ordinance has been in place, since the 90s and before, there's nothing in the building code for residential demolitions, but there was for commercial, which means, you know, anything over three units.
Could I get a time check? I note that,
yeah, sure.
30 minutes was requested for this presentation. I just want to see where we are.
Let me just get through this. This is one of the slides that is important to getting your feedback, and then
got
I'll
it.
Go to the other one, and then, you know,
thank
the rest
you.
Of it's fine. So this is an issue. We always assumed that it applied to one and two family, but now the state building code does, you know, essentially allow the us to regulate commercial demolitions, and we have our definition of residential structure in our code includes multifamily, and so we want to narrow it back down to the one and two family. We already did the hazardous materials.
I do have a question,
sure,
about,
yeah,
that. That's the one item that stood out to me the most in the report. The original intent of this ordinance was to protect housing, and
yep.
why draw the distinction between single family and multifamily?
Only in this ordinance. Now if the council wants to look at multifamily, then we would recommend a different group to look at it, because basically we had, you know, people like Jeff here who's, you know, they do single family, you know, the Home Builders Association, that sort of thing. And, you know, if you look at the notice provisions, you know, how do you put a door hanger on a high rise? You know, they just weren't crafted with commercial zones in mind. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
And then the other issue that came up was, right now it is only in the residential zones. You know, there's been talk about whether we should expand that. And, again, we don't recommend doing that. Unless there's a different group that's convened and we look at how that would work, because the current ordinance as it's written was written with one and two family in mind. And then I think, again, you know, we plan to create administrative rules. I don't think those... All of those have been... So basically the next steps at this point... is to get your feedback. If you're okay with us going back and amending it to limit it to one and two family, at least for now, if you want us to come back and do something different, certainly, you know, we would be glad to do that with the right people in the room. And then retain the current language that limits it to the residential comprehensive plan map areas. And then we'll reconvene the subcommittee to look at these and then come back to you with the code changes. Any questions?
Any further conversation before I ask for a motion to accept the report?
I think that's my
question. Oh, good point. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any public testimony on this issue, Sue?
Can I make some comments?
Oh, yes, sir. Please.
Jeff Fish, Fish Construction Northwest. I more want to answer some things that were said by the council. In your question about why was single family taken on, when I was chair of DRAC, it came to DRAC that United Neighbors for Reform and some other people were concerned about single family homes were being torn down in different neighborhoods. So really that's where the focus came from the public. Getting back to Commissioner Fritz's and Commissioner Fish's discussion on asbestos and lead, that is something our industry, my side of the industry, has a hard time understanding, much less the regulators. When I demolish a structure, I have to do a asbestos check on that. I provide that to my excavator. My excavator has to have that when he goes and takes the materials to the dump to dump or the recycle center, wherever he goes. He has to have that report. So, and there's teeth in that. I can't remember if the fine's $10,000 or $15,000 if you're trying to get rid of asbestos. And not doing it correctly. So in my opinion, that has a lot of teeth in it. When you get to the lead thing, as Nancy said, we've been in a couple of meetings together where we've had five state agencies in there, everybody pointing fingers at each other saying, no, that's yours, that's yours, that's yours. Nobody knows what's going on. I'm also on the deconstruction committee, and we had a meeting, what was that, 10 days ago, I guess, about 10 days ago. I recently, about a month ago, tore down a home in which had lead in the paint and around the windows and in the barge rafters. I went online to the state certified deconstruction people, or excuse me, the lead abatement people, and found a guy, had him come out and look at my lead. He says, yeah, you've got about $5,000 worth of lead that we could abate here, but he says, why do you want to spend the money? And I said, what do you mean? He says, you fall inside of what's called a T-clip. That's an acronym. You can tear the house down because you don't have enough lead in the percentage of the materials there in the house. I made mention at the meeting and got taken to task by Multnomah County because Multnomah County said I should have called them and asked them about it instead of calling somebody certified. So there's a ton of confusion, especially on lead in the industry. So.
Can I just make a comment, Mayor? Jeff Fish is no relation to me.
Vice versa.
Somebody beat me to the punch.
But he is a very successful builder, and he's a very responsible builder. And he serves on a lot of committees, and he has helped us get things right. He doesn't always agree with where the council lands, but he's a good citizen who's engaged. We don't develop regulations because we're worried about Jeff Fish. We develop regulations because we're worried about people that are cut corners and are needlessly putting neighbors at risk. We wish everyone operated at your standards, but clearly that's not the case, and so that's why we have to regulate. And on the question of who's on first, the mayor used to work in Salem. And so he's familiar with this question of turf and jurisdiction. And I think we've now heard this, Mayor, so many times that it's time to really resolve this question, because the public really doesn't care about our challenges of figuring out who's on first. They just expect that we're looking out for their safety. And I think this is one where we ought to just work with our state and federal partners and get it right. And err on the side of public safety.
Well, as is always the case, Commissioner, the brunt of any lack of communication is felt at the local level. So in a sense, we have an obligation to make sure that we're creating a responsive process. And I appreciate what Commissioner Fish said. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sue, is there anybody signed up for public testimony?
We have two requests.
Good.
Charles Bridge Crane Johnson and Sarah Long, please come up.
Charles has asked me to speak first. My name is Sarah Long. Is there anything else I'm supposed to say, like my address
that's
or anything?
It. Nope, okay. That's good. Thanks, Sarah.
Okay, I don't know why either of the two people who were up here speaking to you were actually here. Jeff Fish is on a lot of committees, yes. He actually shouldn't be on any. Nancy Thorington should not be an employee of the City of Portland. I have an email here I wrote 2 years ago to the city. I'm going to go ahead and read it to you. Regarding Nancy Thorington. On multiple occasions, I and others witnessed Nancy Thorington, a Bureau of Development Services code and policy analyst and licensed attorney in the state of Oregon, act in bad faith while performing her duties as an employee of BDS. She told falsehoods and spread misinformation.
I'm sorry. Could you keep your testimony pertinent to the ordinance and to the report that we're discussing today? If you want to talk about an HR issue, I'm happy to meet with you later to talk about that separately, but we're really focused on this ordinance.
Sure. Let's do that then, because neither Jeff Fish nor Nancy Thorington should be testifying or giving reports to you guys, period. So that's all I have to say then.
Fair enough. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good morning. As you know, Charles Bridge Crane Johnson, much better than tower cranes. But what happens is we're getting to a point where affordable single-family homes with or without lead and asbestos in them get knocked down, and sometimes tower cranes show up in residential neighborhoods. Right now, Montevilla, a friend of mine, the house beside her, not a tower crane, only like a three-story, I think they could prove it up to five, monstrosity. But despite the very serious concerns about Ms. Thornton that have been raised, you do need to listen to one thing she said, and that was the equity problem. In this report, we did start to get the glimmer and the touch on, but one thing that we need to do is stop demolishing Portland, especially demolishing it in a way that makes it impossible for us to maintain the number of entry-level, first-time owner, average-income homes. Now, I know that's a little bit beyond the scope of the, maybe the technical language of this letter, but or this ordinance, but I think that there was some effort, and you as elected officials, even though sometimes large amounts of money can be involved in your campaigning, and we've made some great progress on that. Thanks, Amanda. What's great about Portland is the average people. And they never get accolades, you know, Dyke Dames, Homer Williams, the other Mr. Fish, they're in positions where they do things with high price tags and, you know, occasionally get notoriety. But with this ordinance, it's important not just the letter of the changes you get, but that people know that the commissioners here have a spirit of protecting average Portlanders so that if we do fail to save an average income single family dwelling, we know that you've got systems in place that it won't be the only hope that average working people's only hope for a house will be Habitat for Humanity. And to do that, as you mentioned among yourselves, you talked about the legislative agenda. In a perfect world, we always get sold this bill of goods that state preemptions are great floors, but they never work out that way for the city of Portland. They always end up to be crappy low ceilings. And when you're working tomorrow and in the future on the legislative agenda, you need to, on this issue and others, find ways to work with the great ones, Dembro, Frederick, Kotek, to untie your hands so that here in Portland, where we have resources, we can manage environmental pollution. And also what we heard was that because little towns around the state are scared that they don't have the resources to face some of their pollution issues, they'll just let their people get poisoned. We have a very challenging budget coming up. You bailed at the right time for the state budget.
Thank you, and I'm sorry I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
But let's work strongly with all the legislators, even Republicans and East Oregonian state legislators, so that people are protected from pollution that happens when residential structures release their toxins.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog PDX. One of the concerns I have on the demolitions is also looking in the area of the foreclosures. And as you know, a lot of the nuisance liens, and we heard a gentleman earlier talk about liens being put on his home, but I'm talking actual vacant homes out there that have had a tremendous amount of nuisance liens put on the properties. They end up going into foreclosures. The current owners lose pretty much all their equity. And a lot of these homes are already determined to be demolished right from the get-go. And what we need to do is we need to put a safeguard into these properties that state that we would like these properties to be purchased by somebody that does want to pretty much just rehab the property and not demolish it. And one of the reasons these foreclosures take place is that we need to have enough people send information in the community about the sale itself. So what we're actually doing, instead of Mr. Fish, the developer here, which I have respect for him doing what he's doing, and I think there's a purpose in the community for what he is doing on demolitions and building new homes. But also, if we can get more people in the sales pool, that will put the people who want to see these homes rehabbed, restored, and kept in their communities for various reasons, because they like the home to be there. They don't want to see it torn down. We get more people stepping up to the table and being able to bid on these homes, not just the developers, but we have the people out in the community. The neighborhood associations can join together. They can purchase these homes if they want to. They can purchase these foreclosures and rehab them and keep them the way they currently are and fix them up. And the reality is that if you don't get enough of those groups together, they will outnumber the developers. I'm sorry to say this to the developers. And they have the ability to come in with more money at the end of the day when there are large groups of people that do not want these homes to be demolished. And if you can negotiate with these groups to have an understanding that it's advantageous to do this in your neighborhoods, if you like these homes there, you can also create rentals in the neighborhoods, rehabbed, fixed up, have good neighbors in these homes. There's no reason to demolish these homes, and every developer will say this. They have a certain profit they have to build into these properties. Normally, groups of people that come in with money will pay higher than these developers will for these properties, and they'll look elsewhere. And there's plenty of other places to look, too, so they're not going to lose. But it has to be more of a community involvement and more people stepping up to the bidding process to begin with. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anybody else signed up for public? Joe, you'd like to come up, or anybody else?
I didn't sign up.
That's fine. Come on up, sir.
For the record, my name is Joe Waltz. I represent Individuals for Justice. I just have a question. If we could use as a wedge to put all demolitions, just stop them, and use that as a wedge for something that we wanted. For instance, trying to figure out the huge rent increases in the apartments from the developers, those kinds of things. I don't know if it's legal or not, but what the heck? You got 40 attorneys. Somebody could figure it out. And just say to the people that are doing the demolitions, and my hunch is that they're connected somehow to the developers, and say to them, look, we have this huge problem. We say we can't cap the rents because of state laws. Even though I disagree with that, you should challenge it. You could use this as a wedge. We're not going to do any more demolitions until you guys figure out what's going on with these rents. All right? We're just going to stop all of them. I think you have the legal right to do that. And I'm not suggesting you do it. I'm just suggesting you gamble a little bit. What do you have to lose? You say to these guys, because we have to figure something out. We're all trying to figure something out about these rents. And everybody kept saying, oh, we can't do that. Well, let's find out stuff that we can do. And I think you can use this as a wedge and say, you want demolition? Okay, guys. Tell me about this new project that's going on. How do we do maybe a dozen apartments that are low income? How do we do that? And let them do it. If you ask people how to do this stuff, they usually figure it out. So anyway, it's just a suggestion. I don't have any great objections to you blowing things up or demolishing really nice houses for something that's ugly. However, use it as a wedge if you can. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anybody else who'd like to testify on this matter, Commissioner Fish?
I move that we accept the report.
Second.
I have a motion. I have a second. Sue, could you please call the roll?
Fritz. Thank you very much, Nancy Thornton, and your team for coming back with this summary after 18 months. It was one of the things I was most happy to work on when I was in charge of development services in response to community members. And the fact that we do not have 20 people showing up here from United Neighborhoods from Reform tells me that we've got at least part of it right. I do appreciate especially that the notification part is working so that people can at the very least cover their cars and close their windows. We're not allowed to have a moratorium by state land use law, so we already know that. I personally am not interested in doing things just to try. If we know that they're not allowed, I'd much rather look at what can we do, which is what we did with the deconstruction ordinance. And what I'd like to see us do is to work some more, to see how that's going fairly quickly so that we could perhaps make it not just for 100-year-old houses, but for anything with a lesser time frame as well. I suspect that we're going to see a diminishment of demolitions in this calendar year, because the comprehensive plan that we've just worked so hard on goes into effect next year. And with that and the infill projects, I believe there'll be a lot of incentives for more infill, which would make it less likely that developers would demolish this year when they could get so much more next year. So that just gives us time to work with Planning Bureau and with Development Services in seeing what else could we do before we give all those giveaways. So thank you very much for the report. Thank you, Commissioner Hugh Daly, for your stewardship at the Bureau. Aye.
Thanks for an excellent presentation. Nancy, thank you for your good work. Jeff, thanks for the work that you and your son-in-law do in serving in committees and in making sure that we have the benefit of your perspective, even when we disagree on policies. And to our newest colleague, Commissioner Hugh Daly, the Portland Water Bureau is very interested in this issue about lead paint, both in terms of abatement, but also in the context of demolition. So we are eager to work with you as you develop code and come back to council. Congratulations on your first item. Aye.
Salzman.
Great report. Appreciate all the hard work and the questions you've posed for us. I'm not sure we gave you all the guidance you're looking for today, but we do appreciate you digging in the weeds on this, and thank you, Commissioner Hugh Daly, for shepherding this project to us today. Aye.
Hugh Daly.
I feel like I'm getting a little more credit than I deserve, since I wasn't, I think you had more to do it with it than I did. Nancy, thank you for the report. I do have some remaining questions, and I'm sure we'll be having lots of conversations between now and when we finalize this in code. I share Commissioner Fritz's hope that we can expand the deconstruction deconstructions to include more houses. I've supported that ordinance, and I just look forward to working with you more in the future. Aye.
Wheeler.
I greatly appreciate this report, and Commissioner Hugh Daly, take the credit when you can, because you'll certainly get the heat, some of which you're not, shouldn't be taking the credit for either. And I want to thank the three members of the City Council who've worked very hard on this. I think this was a great report, and I particularly like the way that you highlighted what yet needs to be done. It was worth the price of admission this morning to understand that we have a long way to go when it comes to the lead abatement piece in particular. And I share Commissioner Fish's belief that we as a city council need to be in the leaders. You know, we need to take a leadership role there. I do also assume you'll be walking the floor and talking with us each individually, or our offices individually, to get the feedback you need to move forward. So with that, aye. The report is accepted. Clerk, if you could read item 42.